It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
All right, boys and girls, we are back with another edition of the Ben Domenech Podcast brought to you by Fox News. You can check out all of our podcasts at foxnewspodcast.com. I hope that you will rate, review, and subscribe to this one and share it with a friend if you find it of interest. Today, I have a conversation with Matt Kranick. He is someone who I've been talked to many times over the years. He's an expert when it comes to foreign policy. He's served in multiple roles in administrations and is someone who can weigh in on what's going on when it comes to China, when it comes to Russia, and when it comes to our general challenges around the globe. Matt Kranick, coming up next.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Matt Kranick, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. Are we going to have a situation where Russia actually uses a nuke in Ukraine?
Well, Ben, it's always a pleasure to be back, and I wish I had better news, but I think the world is closer to nuclear use now than it's been probably in our lifetimes. I've been saying, I think, a 20% chance that Putin uses nuclear weapons in Ukraine.
Do you think that that's something that has been diminished at all by the Biden administration's policies toward Ukraine and toward Russia, or do you think that they have accelerated the likelihood of that?
It's been a mixed bag. Early on, I think the Biden administration's signaling was making things worse. You know, Biden saying the U.S. military option is off the table altogether in Ukraine. You know, maybe that's good policy, but that's not something we want to tell Vladimir Putin. We want him to worry about that. And a couple of weeks ago, John Kirby, NSC spokesperson, said if Putin uses nuclear weapons, that would be really bad for him because radioactivity might blow back into Russia. And I remember thinking, Putin doesn't care about that. He's perfectly willing.
Not a little bit.
Not even a little bit. But, you know, Jake Sullivan on the Sunday shows maybe 3 weeks ago was really good. He said there would be catastrophic consequences. There would be a decisive U.S. response. And so I think the kind of tough but vague threats are the right way to go. Make Putin fear the worst. Make him worry.
This is a core question that I have for you, though, because the general impression has been that the Biden administration has backed off of the typical approach to deterrence policy going back decades that says, you know, any kind of use of nuclear weapons is unacceptable and would result in an immediate response that would be, you know, equally, on that same level. The Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, a number of other places have all reported that the message that has been sent to Russia has been, if you use a nuke, then the United States will engage to a greater degree in the war effort in Ukraine. They will, supply more weapons. They will, participate in terms of flyovers. They will do all these other things, which is not the same, obviously, as normal deterrence policy. Do you think that's the wise move?
Yeah, I guess I'd make 2 points. One, the fact that this is in Ukraine, a non-ally, does make things more complicated. You know, if it was Putin nuking Poland or the UK or Japan,
sure,
I think our policy is clear. The fact that this, we don't have a defense commitment to Ukraine makes things complicated. And, if Putin, we've already said there would be catastrophic consequences if Putin uses nuclear weapons. So if, this reporting is right, and what we would essentially do is more of the same, more sanctions, more arms to the Ukrainians. You know, I think this would be like Obama's red line in Syria from 10 years ago, but much, much worse. You know, I don't think anybody thinks more sanctions is really catastrophic consequences. So I think Putin would look at this and say, essentially, I got away with this. Let's use 2 or 3 or 10 nuclear weapons. I think Kim Jong-un might say, hey, we can use nuclear weapons now. There's no real consequences. So I do think that if Putin used nuclear weapons, our response would need to be tougher than just more of the same.
I want to shift to the Chinese sort of focus. The experience that I think a lot of people had was looking at that footage of Hu Jintao being removed from that meeting and trying to decipher what that meant. What did it mean to you?
Well, the big takeaway for me is it shows that Xi is in charge and the most powerful dictator in China since Mao Zedong. And so I think he's eliminating all competition, including his predecessors. And I think it means for the United States that this likely will mean an even more confrontational Chinese foreign policy. And so the United States and its allies need a serious strategy to deal with the threats that Xi and China will pose.
Mike Gallagher has written a piece in the Wall Street Journal talking about the need for an anti-Navy when it comes to the Taiwanese experience. Tell me, what do you think the United States posture ought to be toward Taiwan at this moment? Learning the lessons that we have from Ukraine about the need to make a potential, something that could be scarfed up by an enemy, potentially more prickly, more difficult to deal with. What should we be doing now in terms of our lessons learned from that?
Yeah, well, Congressman Gallagher is great. He's a Georgetown PhD, so I'm proud of that. And he and I worked together on a presidential campaign in 2016, so I liked his article. We got into war in Ukraine essentially because Putin miscalculated. He thought it was going to be easy, and so he went ahead and attacked. And I'm afraid that Xi may make the same miscalculation in Taiwan. He may think this is going to be easy. Let's go ahead and do it. So I think U.S. strategy needs to be to disabuse him of that notion. So the first step is having a clear declaratory policy. And the Biden administration has really not followed through on that. You know, the president says something, one day, and then his White House walks it back immediately thereafter. So that's that incoherent messaging is a problem. But then the other piece is that we do need a military strategy that could prevent the Chinese Navy from attacking Taiwan. So I think Congressman Gallagher is exactly right on that. The only way they're going to take Taiwan is if they move large numbers of troops over on ships. And so if we have the ability, as even Obama's Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, Michelle Flournoy, the way she put it, is we need the ability to sink the Chinese Navy in 72 hours. And I think that's right conceptually, but we're not building the military to do that right now.
One of the things that is obviously a talking point comes up very frequently within the world of Fox News commentary and others as well, is that we have a military right now that is embracing wokeness to the detriment of its ability to fight wars, that essentially it is, engaged in all of these different kind of social justice or signaling kind of experiences in ways that are a detriment to their ability to function as they are needed. And I have to say, I don't think I'm betraying any confidence in saying this, that having brothers and brothers-in-law who serve respectively in the U.S. Army, the U.S. Navy, and in the Marines, I hear this constantly as something that they complain about. And they complained about it, regardless of what the media attention was to it. How do we correct something like that? How do we readjust? Because I think the vast majority of the American people want a military that can function and that can do its job.
I think the way you change it is with new leadership. And if you look back to the 2018 National Defense Strategy under Secretary Mattis, one of the key themes was lethality, that the Department of Defense needs to be focused essentially on killing people and breaking things. And, that's what they do best. And so it's not a place to carry out big social experiments. It should be focused on defending the country. And I think it might take a new administration, a new Secretary of Defense to prioritize lethality again.
Mm-hmm. I certainly hope that that's something that's prioritized. You know, looking forward, we have a situation in these current midterms where you're likely to see a vast number of outsiders elected to the U.S. Senate, some of them who have foreign policy views that are vague, some of them who have foreign policy views that are distinct in their break with Washington, D.C. How much do you think that they will actually change the foreign policy perspective of the Senate and of Washington in terms of, you know, the simple challenge of the fact that they have, you know, three or four or five members, depending on the outcome of this election, and not, you know, obviously a plurality even.
My guess, maybe my hope, is that their views will change more than their views will change Washington. And I say that because I think that, you know, despite the mistakes that the United States has made, its overall strategy and approach to the world is basically the right one. And I think when they get to Washington, they build foreign policy teams. They talk to their colleagues. They get briefings from, you know, Pentagon and elsewhere. I think they'll understand the threats, the real threats this country faces, and the need for the United States to take an active role in the world. Because if we withdraw, it's not goodness that's going to be filling the vacuum. It's going to be our enemies who want bad things for us. So I'm hopeful they'll learn.
Last question: the Progressive Caucus of the U.S. House, you know, had this letter that they put out regarding Ukraine. One that was, basically it became controversial. It was withdrawn. They said that it essentially was released without approval. What did you think of their perspective on that? And what do you think about the likelihood that that is going to have any kind of truck post-election with this White House?
Well, you know, we all know the lesson of Hitler at Munich. You know, we tried to appease a dictator and it didn't work. And essentially, that's what this letter calls for. Hey, let's just give Putin some of Ukraine. Let's sign a peace treaty and get this to settle down. And I think there's no reason to believe that will work. If we sign a ceasefire now, Putin will just rearm and try to take the rest of Ukraine later. So I do think we want a strong support for Ukraine. You know, a president like Reagan would have loved to have Ukrainians, you know, destroy the Russian military for him. You know, that's what we're doing right now. It's a good opportunity for us to weaken one of our biggest enemies. I don't know. The Biden administration's basically they've done the right thing on Ukraine, but 2 months too late. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm basically guessing that's going to continue. So they're not going to go as far as the Progressive Caucus wants, but I think they have been a little too cautious.
We'll certainly see, where they go from here. Thank you so much, Matt, for joining me today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Ben.
More of the Ben Domenech podcast right after this. So I wanted to give you my own perspective on what's going to happen when it comes to the upcoming midterms. I certainly think that it's going to be a very interesting night. A lot of potential outcomes that I think could surprise us. We could see, I think, you know, potentially Patty Murray going down in Washington State. She's up by either one or three, depending on which poll numbers you look at. I think you could also see a situation where, you know, the Georgia race could go to a runoff where Herschel Walker has to take on Raphael Warnock, perhaps without the benefit of having Brian Kemp's coattails. And I also think that, you know, a state that's going to be, I think, very difficult to analyze going into the election night situation is Arizona, where Blake Masters and Carrie Lake are obviously kind of going at different levels. Carrie Lake has been very successful. She's figured out a way to appeal to general election voters in ways that I think are surprising to a lot of people. And then on the flip side, Blake Masters, while being someone who has, you know, had a lot of money behind him, had a lot of investment in his effort to take out Mark Kelly, is perhaps someone who's lagging a bit as opposed to running ahead of things. I have to make a bet on this, and I, you know, take betting very seriously. I'm supposed to have a conversation tonight, in fact, over dinner, where I have to decide where I'm going to go. And the under-over is set at 53. So, you know, the expectation being, you know, that's what you would get if you had Republicans run the field in terms of Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona. I'm really torn on this one. I think it might be 52. I might take the under on it, which is weird because I'm taking the over definitely when it comes to the House. The House, I think, is, you know, not just a foregone conclusion, but I think you could potentially see Republicans win almost 50 seats in terms of their performance. But, you know, look, it's a difficult thing when it comes to the Senate to be able to pull off a string, a clean sweep of victories in a number of difficult states with challenging political dynamics. I mean, look at a state like Colorado, for instance, where Joe O'Dea is, you know, putting on, I think, an impressive effort against Michael Bennett. But he's also someone who, you know, is hampered by the fact that the state is blue. And you know, you look at someone like Adam Laxalt, who's a very impressive, you know, political candidate in Nevada, but also someone who's up against the old Harry Reid regime when it comes to the unions and the different voters who are activated by that. And so it's going to be an interesting night. I look forward to covering it from New York with Fox and giving you my own insight to the degree that I can about what's going on. But it really is something that I think is difficult to predict at this juncture when it comes to the Senate outcome. Republicans are going to take the Senate. I'm very confident of that. But the number of seats they actually have to work with, which, as you know, can be really significant in terms of the way that they perform under Mitch McConnell's leadership, is really up in the air at this point, and I'm just not sure about it. I'm Ben Domenech. You've been listening to another edition of the Ben Domenech Podcast. We'll be back soon with more to dive back into the fray.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.